Blog Talk Radio.
Chapter of Masonic Effects. Nothing like connecting with you through the airwaves. This is just fabulous. It's 38 days until solstice, wherever you are on the planet. You're enjoying the ends of summer and fall, and looking forward to the change of seasons in the winter, or you're full of anticipation and putting spring aside with fresh life growing around you, or you're looking forward to the ceremony of renewal that has been part of our existence as far back as we can trace. Solstice, it's upon us, and it should be. It's amazing. Welcome, and to our international listeners, of course. It's an absolute pleasure to have you. And a special note to shout out today to our listeners in Cameroon and in Brazil. Thank you for tuning us in with such regularity. As we go about our business today, I think we are going to enjoy the commentary that and the music selections that I've pulled together that I hope feed the notion of that you're an audacious kind of critter, that you aspire to round out your character, your personality, your intellect, your abilities, your decisions, to be at ease with yourself and with the world around you, to be able to put your thoughts and actions into a perspective that is consistent with your values as a man, as a person. The world around us is changing, and we have never been in a position to lament it. That is an individual conceit. We can talk about how we liked things the way it was before. Familiarity will do that, won't it? It makes things altogether predictable and familiar to us. New things being described constantly mean that we have to keep our brain fresh and renewed. Science tells us that this is a significant way of helping the health of that is essential organ. Who knew that falling into the doldrums would accelerate our decline? It's sort of common sense when you think about it. So we're here today, we're going to try and pull together ideas and perspectives. Each of us have perspectives. Some of us, in fact, have very little information, me included, very little information, but we're full of opinion, just full of opinion. So here we're going to try and produce some information and reflect information, of course. That's what I mean. So that the decisions that you make as a Mason and about Masonry are, at the very least, qualified. We have every one of us, every jack one of us, valid opinion. With that comes a responsibility to be cautious. Our opinions, spoken as truths or thought of as truths, puts us on very precarious grounds. They are what they are. They are simply a perspective, a unique perspective on the world as we see it. Is that the truth? Well, when you realize that there are, 7.5 billion people on the world, and each with an accepted perspective of their own, it gets a little bit flaky to be suggesting that each one of those perspectives, I guess, you know, what we say in our own way, they are truths. But truths tend to be something that is common to us all. So as Masons, we rely on that symmetry between mathematics and philosophy. It's not staggered. We're taught to reflect balance, although the service industry in us wants us to reflect hierarchies and make priorities. You know, what's your primary responsibility? Well, when we're younger, we can see that responsibilities as a hierarchy, like a ladder. You know, there's something at the top and something at the bottom, and the one you select to be at the top means that you're most honorable about that. As you get a little older, though, let's call it maturity. As you begin to mature, and not every person matures with age, that's for sure. Look around you. We begin to realize that life is a matter of balance points, particularly if we've been lost in our own self-loathing or depressions or longings. In fact, nobody wants to hear it, particularly us. When we have those thoughts, we repeat them. It's like a mantra in our own mind, and we can begin to believe our own rhetoric. Oh, my. Oh, my. If you say it over and over enough, you begin to believe it. Fool's paradise, yeah? So here we want to open those open minds and reflect the open mind. We can't do that for you. You come here with that. Open them perhaps a window into a different way of thinking, a way of expressing some level of independent thought, not so much derivative. If anything, I think we can agree that one of the most derivative features of human nature is conflict, is that withering, pathetic notion that being critical of other people is helpful to our understanding of the world. And it's certainly far from accurate. Certainly far. It's the limits. But you know that because you've stepped up. So you stepped up to the expectations within yourself of being a true Freemason. Oh, not the dress up, the party favor, but the true Freemason, that contemplative mind. Whoa. You want to create a yawner in a lodge, just start talking like this. Unless you have the right kind of a group that are of like-minded. And often they're not. Often they're not. Often it's fragmented. It's like lost boys. They're sort of, you know, it's like orphans. You take in anybody and fingers crossed that it's going to gel into some kind of cohesive mindset. Well, you can argue, of course, because you have some intelligence that you know about what's wrong and what's right with that kind of thinking. But we also are expected to make value judgments, but to judge reasonably and responsibly. So even those notions that we're never to have judgments, well, you know, give your head a shake. We know better than that, but we're not glib about it. We're certainly not. We have to be thoughtful about that. I was listening to a person that's new to Masonry the other day, and he's quite a little magpie about it. He has, you know, he's very new, he has expectations, and he's impatient, and he has goals, and a mindset. We had done quite a bit of research about the order before he was initiated. You know the type. And in another version of me as a Mason, I would have felt compelled to correct him, but I realized that the work of correcting or understanding or reflecting on what his current thinking is up to him. And whether he ever does that is based on his ability, not mine. The mentor in me is waiting for him to show commitment. Enthusiasm isn't commitment. Being an enthusiast doesn't really, no. We want to be careful because that tends to fade. Being afraid, you know, being fearful of our own abilities and our own potential, being fearful of being able to correct problems as they come up. You know, these are the holdback moments. These are the things that hold us back from moving forward. So the question that is whether you realize how you hold yourself back. Well, what's really at the basis of those anxieties and fears about change, really? The world has always changed, and we've always been in a process of discovery. My goodness, it drove us. Do you remember the absolute joy of doing this as a boy? A discovery. Whether it was in our physical abilities or just our natural curiosity about the world that we live in. And we were often taught by people that brought their own anxieties and inadequacies to their performance. So many, for what reason, is staggering. The decisions were being made that you had to be a certain gender to learn sciences and maths. These kind of prejudices were alive and well up until just recently. But we had to go through those days. We had to go through that in order to experience, to get to the point that we're at now. Oh, this is... The changes that we go through as Masons are difficult. If they were easy, anybody would be doing it. And, you know, the secret to all of this is that our secrets, our truths, are open to the public. They're open secrets. And what holds us back most of all is ourself. Even the lack of imagination is not necessarily a barrier, because if you are at all attentive, you can absorb ideas like a sponge. And, you know, it's interesting that we began to talk about comfort zone. Some of you have heard that. Comfort zone. stepping out of our comfort zone, stepping out of what is familiar. We're never really, the illusion is that we're anywhere else. We're always out of our comfort zone. We never are able to predict. We have some familiarity with what's coming tomorrow and next day and next week. But there's, you know, that simple little turn of a phrase. We can't predict. We don't. But we're familiar. And the way that we're familiar is through our sense of compassion. Right now, it's not popular. It's not populist. It's not eager to say things like that or to think that. It doesn't invalidate whether this is a truth or not, but decide for yourself. You may not be somebody transgendered or of the other gender, but your sense of compassion allows you to see the world through that person's eyes. If that person is living in a state of constant fear, we and you can imagine, because you've experienced fear, what it would be like, what would it be like closing your eyes every night in fear, hoping you're not discovered, hoping that if those that do discover you don't harm you. Imagine what that's like, having to wake up every morning with a secret about yourself that you want to reveal, that you need to reveal, to, because you seek, like anybody else that's healthy, you seek and you deserve validation and affirmation as a human being. Imagine what it's like when you can't do that. Imagine for just a second that you can't prosper, you can't move to the level of your ability because of the color of your skin or the accent in your voice. Imagine what that is like. The greatness of masonry is allowing us to realize that it is so multidimensional. It's changing. It's being reinvented, just as you are every day. Now, whether you admit that or not is up to you. Kind of pathetic if we don't. To my way of thinking, that's kind of pathetic to miss that opportunity for growth. To be able to at least acknowledge that we're confident enough to handle whatever tomorrow brings. Where did we, now this is the question I want to put out there. Did we lose that capacity, or is that a capacity we never had? Oh, I don't want you to tell me the answer to that. But deeply within yourself, you know. Ponder that for a moment during the program. Did we have that capacity, that confidence? And was it beaten out of us, shamed out of us? Did we, or was it never there in the first place? Confidence isn't something that just occurs. That's a state of mind that we refer to as arrogance, smugness. The Romans banned that for a while in the guise of hubris. It was illegal. It's against the law to loud your position, your wealth, your items over anybody else. Hubris. We could use that law in small measures again, if you don't mind me saying so. But you alone know the answer to that. Ponder it. Today, the music that goes along with this, we have, I'm going to dig into a poetry, the poetry of Victor Hugo. Oh, just amazing. Here, this is one of the reasons why Victor Hugo, as we're allowed and encouraged to examine, investigate the arts and sciences. Here, I operate with a mindset that we don't have class distinctions. We have distinctions in terms of our abilities, our natural abilities. But our nature is something that we share in common. And here's just give you a sense of a taste of Victor Hugo. Music, You like music. Hmm? Music expresses that which cannot be said and on which it is impossible to be silent. Here's Charlie Parker. All the things that are. Good horn. Whew. This is from, about 2008, they dug this one out. Charlie Parker. Charlie Parker. Yeah, what's not to like it? Commentary today is making it harder than need be. Is conflict more than human conceit? Is it a natural artifact of a community with the benefits of predictability comes a price? A need to willingly comply. The benefit of predictability, hindsight. The way this was put by a poet, feeling comfortable in harness, is the way a gentleman might say it. Why do we seem to make compromise so difficult? Why, as if it was not a steep curve to climb? It is. Why do men mix the muscularity of boyhood with pride and honor? Given the fork in the road, why is the well-trodden path bordered by so much avoidable tension? We want to acknowledge equality. Yet we know some are born with more of what we call intelligence ability than others. Maybe if we could account for dubious parenting, what actually takes place behind closed doors, we would have enough context to understand those differences. All supposition, speculation, external. Freemasonry must seem ridiculous to cynics looking at this question. Poor people are not as intelligent as wealthy. Nice people are better than ill-mannered types. Certain neighborhoods, skin tone, and accents are book covers. If this were the case, there would be little need for Freemasonry, and even less need for vague propositions. The craft comes in shades, an enriched palette in the hands of an artist or whatever metaphor is suitable to you, the observer. It allows us to avoid problems in life, and when problems occur, the principles and etiquette illustrate what to do. Our principles, our manners teach us what to do. You have to study them. Why ask the question when the answer is openly given and you accept it? You did. Aude vide tace. Listen, aude vide. Watch. Tace, the one that just astounds me. Me, not you. You're the brilliant, gifted kind. Tace, we watch, we listen in silence. This is the throwback to the Pythagorean college, isn't it? For the first 2 years, any new student was not to speak because they didn't have anything to say. They were there to absorb. They were there to sponge. And you can imagine what happens when you learn to control your tongue. You begin to open a world open and look into a world of learning, of observation. It's like learning to feed little birds with seed in your hand. You can flail around and yell and have at it, but it's the moment that you are able to sit there and control yourself, those vulnerable little birds will come and pick up the seed from the palm of your hand. Think about it yourself. Whether you apply it or not makes very little difference to the community until you do. Until you take the high road, you become the bigger man. Speaking of bigger men, here's a little Stefan Grappelli and Oscar Peterson and Joe Pass from a live performance, as you can tell. Beautiful tune. Nuage. Thank you. New Age is, oh, it's just like filigree to the brain. Just so, so compelling. Nothing is more powerful than an idea whose time has come. True, huh? True. Listen, sit back and fill up your glass. Treat yourself like the gentleman you are. That you know you can be. Make yourself comfortable here for a moment. I'm going to share a poem from one of the best-known French writers, Victor Hugo. Demain de l'aube. Tomorrow at dawn. Tomorrow at dawn, at the hour when the countryside whitens, I will depart. You see, I know you wait for me. I will go through the forest and over the mountains. I cannot stay far from you any longer. I will trudge on, my eyes fixed on my thoughts, ignoring everything around me without hearing a sound. Alone, unknown, back stooped, hands crossed, saddened, and the day will be like night for me. I will neither see the golden glow of the falling evening, nor the sails going down to a fleur in the distance. And when I arrive, I will place on your tomb a bouquet of green holly and flowering heather. Tomorrow at dawn. Not bad, Mr. Hugo. And here in this part of the world where I am, we celebrate an acknowledgement of the role unique to women, motherhood. To love another person is to see the face of God, he says. Oh, just remarkable. Here. We're going to get into a bit of symbolism, but before I do that, I want to share a little bit of music. Not to think that here, being a Mason qualifies. Being a Mason is, I think, in some ways, coincidental to the big events, to those event horizons, you know? And if a person happens to be a Mason, I don't think they perform... You know, in a derivative. They're not, this isn't a performance piece. I think these are Masons, unlike other people, Masons are participants. They are on the stage of life. All life is a stage, and all the men and women actors. I like that. Masons are on that stage. They may be nervous about what to do. They may be full of bluff and bluster, trying to compete. There's no need to compete. You're known. Freemasonry is the world of transparency, where you're known by whether your words and your actions are consistent. Not whether you have a sense of propriety. Certainly not. Certainly not. Or whether you're shallow, it's known to anybody that observes within the lodge, just as you do, just as those moments when you observe allows you to understand and learn. We're going to slip into some more study on symbolism, but I'd like you to also think about what Hugo had to say about music. It does express, if you listen deeply, but not to everybody. You know, it's like the certain flavors that genetically some people are geared to savor and other people aren't. Here's something by a person who happens to have been a Freemason, and some music that I absolutely I love. I just adore this this man, beautiful man, and he's doing a song that's one of my favorites. This is music from 1962, Satin Doll by none other than Brother Duke Ellington. Yes. Such a tight group, good musicianship. Brother Duke Ellington. Music by people that aren't supposed to exist. They weren't people. With a vibe that was not supposed to exist because they were property. They were slaves, and they weren't given permission to use their imaginations and pull together something. You can imagine something that had never occurred before. And even in the opening of Masonic Effects, is the first horn riffs played by a trumpeter, and that's a very, very young Louis Armstrong in 1924. So you're hearing things that aren't supposed to exist. You like it? Do you believe it? Yeah. Here's leads us into a really interesting part of our history. over the years, the work has been modified, not to denigrate it in any way, for very valid reasons. And we should and need to be mature enough to grasp those reasons about why things have changed, why the language of our work has been made relevant. Why, it would be like me asking you, why do certain words in our vocabulary fall into disuse? And why are other words each year invented? Why? It's one of those mysteries. But there's reasons if you give it if you're a student at all, there's reasons why that happens. Here we're opening up another chapter in our study of symbolism in craft masonry. And this, we're being guided by Colin Dyer. And we have the benefit of a tremendous amount of research and observation. This isn't just, you know, him reading something and regurgitating it on a page. This is a man that's been processing, and some of his observations are uncanny. Here, we'll just start this and see where it takes you. I think you're going to enjoy this. We're talking today about the form of a lodge. Now remember, all of this, all of the so-called, the secrets that we have, that we think and nobody else knows, is available out there because we have chattered. We're the chatterboxes. We cannot stop talking, and we write things down that we ought not. We talk about the days past when we relied on oral history as if it was an ironclad way of maintaining secrecy. Well, where do you think the big exposés came from? Where do you think they came from? From Masons. That slip of the tongue, that leak, that intemperate mood, that perhaps it was somebody bragging when they had too much to, they had indulged a bit too much. The information's been out there. Be mature about it. It's been out there for a long, long time. Saying that, acknowledging that makes that correct, but it is a fact of life. It is the fact of our existence. So pull that one out and consider it for a time. What's the damage that's been done? Really? The true secret is the experience in your heart and your mind. And those open secrets that are in and around us in lodges, well, let's jump in and explore that just a little bit. A little bit more today. The form of a lodge is an oblong square situated due east and west. Oh, we always find the simplest way of describing things, don't we? because we think that maybe we were thinking it's clever if we can make it a bit obscure. And it's supported by three pillars and standing on holy ground. Now that's a metaphor that just is amazing. It's an amazing feast, that one. Its dimensions are unlimited, and it's covering no less than the spangled canopy of heaven. To this object, the Mason's mind is continually directed. Yeah, that's us. Our mind is continually directed up and out. And in those blessed regions, he hopes at last to arrive by the aid of the theological ladder, which Jacob in his vision beheld reaching from earth to heaven, the three principal rounds of which admonish us to have faith in God, hope in immortality, and charity to all mankind. Not charity as it's often used now as a slur or something derogatory. Much, much more compelling sense of charity to all humanity. And this is when mankind was being used in a very generic sense, not the gender focus edginess that we are considering today. We want to keep that in mind. From these general appearances, it appears that a Mason's Lodge is a microcosm or miniature world over which the glory of the center sheds its refulgent rays like the sun in the firmament to enlighten the brethren in the paths of virtue and science. In the lodge, the practice of social and moral virtue is as essential toward the brethren and invested with the same degree of approbation or censure as the performance of our public duties as Christians and citizens of the world at large. So you've already earmarked when this was written. Again, ask yourself the question, is this a Christian-based organization order or secular, non-secular, secular or non-secular? For me, I've taken obligations to myself and to for myself and to others. It doesn't matter your faith or religion, or whether you're devout. It doesn't matter whether you're a zealot and you're just crazy as whatever. That does matter. That's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about how you, the variations. There's many, many different variations to find that and express that connection with the Creator. A Mason sitting in his lodge, surrounded by the characteristic symbols which are distributed on all sides, feels that he is a member of the universal lodge of nature, created by the author and source of light and redeemed by divine love or charity. I like to think of nature in the sense that Einstein did. It was absolute proof of the Creator. The symmetry of nature is evident. The mathematics of nature is proof in itself. And when he's in lodge, he feels a member of that universal lodge of nature created by the author and source of light and redeemed by divine love or charity. He seriously reflects on the incumbent duties that bind him to practice the permanent virtue and morality which these emblems embody and recommend, in the hope that when he is finally summoned to give up his accounts, he may be transferred from the lodge on earth to the great temple above. There is to enjoy forever the bright system of Freemasonry in its perfect and glorified state of ineffable light, unbounded charity, and undisturbed peace. We're talking about the mind palace, aren't we? States of thought. That's all. We're just talking about it. What you do with that, that's up to you. In so many ways. If you begin by thinking about barriers, excellent, because the only way that we can overcome barriers is by acknowledging them. What you do with that, that's your nature. The brethren used to attend lodge meetings to expatiate on the mysteries of the craft, to consider the teachings of Masonry, discuss its precepts and its symbolism, perhaps as expressed in one of the old lectures. This is part of the old lectures, included sort of a catechism, those questions. What did you come into the lodge for? I came there to conquer my passions, correct my vices, and improve my morals. What qualifications does a man require to be a Mason? Silence and secrecy. What constitutes the character of a Mason? To walk humbly in the sight of God, to do justice, and to love mercy. What are the qualifications suitable for the dignity of the craft? To afford succor to the distressed, to give bread to the poor, and to put the misguided traveler into his way. What does Masonry order us to guard against? blasphemy, drunkenness, lewdness, swearing, evil plotting, lying, and controversy. Then what does Masonry require? Ability, attendance, and a good appearance. If a brother should be lost, where would we seek him? Between the square and the compasses. Why so, brother? Because all honest and good Masons are there, or ought to be there. Because all honest and good Masons are there, or ought to be there, it distinguishes between dishonest and not so good Masons, doesn't it? Stratifies us. I refer to this as the true Masons. That's where you would seek them, between the square and the compasses. The rest, that's the dishonest, and who knows where they drift. Well, we do. What sort of man should a warden be? Now, let me add. He should be well acquainted with the private as well as the public rules and orders of the craft. Can you do that? Can you distinguish between the private and the public rules and orders of the craft? He ought to be strictly honest, humane of nature. Humane of nature. Plants and animals around us. Patient in injuries, modest in conversation, grave in counsel and advice, and above all, constant in amity and faithful in secrecy, which may we all be, God of his infinite goodness grant. Why so, brother? Because all honest and good Masons are there. There's no mention in the older manuscripts and prints of Masons and lodges meeting to work and work ceremonies as the principal reason. Yet there seems to be the major work, that seems to be the major work of lodges today. Where do you stand on that? I think it's a valid observation. But to think that these questions about character and the nature is different than working the ceremonies, that we meet to work ceremonies. And I wonder if that has some, if that speaks to us at all about the way we connect with new Masons, sense of continuity, purpose. We don't do these other things so much. These other things are like an add-on or an anomaly. They're a surprise. Even to talk about the ancient charges that are included in our Constitution, there's no mention of lodges meeting to work ceremonies as the principal reason. That's what we do today. The esoteric ceremonies in earlier times were very short indeed and were often carried out by a small team of officers meeting for that special purpose sometime before the full meeting of the lodge. Many instances may be found of a lodge called for, say, 5 o'clock, with a note stating makings 4 o'clock, passings 4:30. So they made Masons at 4, and they passed at 30 minutes later. The actual work done when the lodge met was, apart from business matters, the rendering of the catechisms known as the lectures, instructive in the symbolism and principles of the craft. This pattern of work was not necessarily consistent in vogue over a long period, but it seems to have been that of about 20 years before the Union of 1813 in many places. Did you get that? Apart from business, the actual work done when the lodge met was the rendering of the catechisms known as the lectures. In these days, much of the instruction and symbolism is incorporated in the ceremonies themselves. so that they are in themselves instructive and contain a good deal of the true teachings of Masonry. The ceremonies which developed after 1813 were longer than those of earlier date and incorporated both the esoteric and the instructive. This also brought about the change from work at table to a separation of lodge work and meal. If the ceremonies are worked in an understanding manner with the master or other brother in the chair for the work, having by his own study found the true meaning to convey to the candidate, then some expatiation may well take place. Something to ponder, eh? Something. Well, I see that candle's burning down here. You're lucky. William Leslie Wilmshurst had lots to say about that. So we'll park him for another day. Absolutely a joy to have you here today. We're going to send you off this week with a little Ella Fitzgerald. She was just so young. She was remarkable. Just remarkable. What a voice. It's been an absolute pleasure. And you listeners from the Philippines and from India and China, connect with us, eh? It's okay. From Russia, you've got the World Cup coming up. Lots going on that's bringing us closer to recognizing that we are part of a global community. And I would say, in all fairness, our role and the impact of the order is going to be very important, not without its challenges. And that's it, as it should be. Here, Cry Me a River from Ella Fitzgerald. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. See you again soon. Enjoy. Jesus. Thanks for joining us. See you soon.